We have John O'Grady. John, local author, who is a participant in the Halloween version of Prison Alley Tales. And we're here to talk about his new book, which I believe is called Certain Trees in the Catskill Mountains. Yes, John, good morning. You're on.
Good morning, Matt. How are you?
I am good. How are you this morning?
Oh, terrific.
Great. In a little while, we're going to have to take a little break because we're going to do the news in a little bit. But while we're here, let's talk about first your book, Certain Trees in the Catskill Mountains, which looked quite lovely.
Yes, it's an unusual book in that it tells the same story in photos on one side, words on the other.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, maybe it's two different stories.
Yeah, this is really interesting, yes. I'm looking at it. I wish we were on television so I could hold this up to the camera. But it is striking black and white photographs with stories.
Yes.
And it is. And then you also wrote Grave Goods.
Yes, that was a few years ago.
And
a collection of essays.
And you live in the Catskills?
Yes. I've returned here after many years away, after living in the West for a quarter century.
Oh, wow. Where in the West?
California, Idaho, Montana.
We're in California.
In Davis for a number of years, in the foothills of the Sierra for a couple of years.
Where my godson went to college.
Oh, where?
UC Davis.
That's where I was. And then most recently in San Francisco for 5 years.
Yeah, and I used to live there part-time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So how did you start here and how did you end up here? And what do we need to know about your books and where can we find them? And do you have any book signings coming up or any of those things?
None on the calendar.
Okay.
Books can mostly be found on Amazon, I think.
Okay.
Can also go to my webpage.
And that is?
That is johnpogrady.com.
Okay.
And I can come by my house and pick up a copy, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find it.
Yes, I have this vision that it's way up a winding road on a hill and hard to be seen.
Yes, people only find it by stumbling upon it. I've written about that.
Yeah, that's sort of good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard the other day that somebody was talking about Daniel Boone, and that Daniel Boone moved as soon as he could see the smoke from a chimney of a neighbor.
Hmm.
And then he moved on to someplace where there were no neighbors. And then when somebody built a house and he could see the smoke, he skedaddled on.
The nice thing about the Catskills is you can wait for your neighbors to go away. It's
yes.
a strange place in that regard. People show up and then they disappear.
Yes. Now, I loved Grave Goods. Tell me a little bit about that, about this book.
Well, it's a collection of essays I wrote over a number of years in the mid to late 90s. Various topics that would strike my interest.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned some of them, I think, psychics and...
Yeah. And you read... What story did you read for Prison Alley Tales?
I read an excerpt from an essay titled Shadows of Doubt.
Oh, yes.
Which is about...
Very spooky.
Ghosts. Yeah, that was the first essay, in fact, that I wrote for that.
Mm-hmm.
That book. In fact, it was the first essay that I wrote that I thought, oh, this sounds like me and not like somebody else.
Wow. That's a really powerful moment.
Yeah, you sort of realize this is over 20 years ago now for me, but as you're writing it, you say, wow, this is me, and not some other person, not some writer you've read, not the voice of a teacher, but it's you.
Yeah.
And it isn't you yourself, but it's a voice that you don't recognize other than...
And feel comfortable with.
Yes. It's not something else. And as I look back on it now, 22, 23 years later, I say, yeah, I still like it, as mm-hmm. well as the rest in there. So,
and then how did the new book, Certain Trees in the Catskill Mountains, come about?
It came about, I just sat down writing these little, each of the little stories in there that occupy a page, a paragraph each. They just kind of occurred to me one after another over a period of a couple of weeks, and I just put them together with some pictures that I'd been taking over the...
And they're gorgeous.
Oh, thanks. I hope.
No, they are. They're absolutely gorgeous pictures and interesting little stories. Now, when is this going to be out?
The printer should have it to me in another week or two, I think. It's unclear. I have to wait for the printer to
print.
Deliver them.
Yes.
Takes a while.
And you came in with a whole other set of books.
Yeah, just stuff I found on my shelf. I had to, in case you wanted to talk about some of these other things, various things I've done over the years. Books, anthologies, journals I edited. And
Well, let's talk about those.
What would you like to know?
Well, there are three other books there besides Grave Goods.
Yes.
And I... Tell me about them.
Okay, Grave Goods, we already...
We already talked a little bit about it.
It's a collection of essays. My first book is titled Pilgrims to the Wild. It's a study of American wilderness writers, I guess you could say. Everett Roos, Henry... David Thoreau, John Muir, Clarence King, and Mary Austin. I wrote it a long time ago. That's a book that is more scholarly.
Mm-hmm.
I moved away from that sort of writing, except for the conclusion of the book, which when I wrote that, I said, I want to go in this direction. And that's where this book I wrote in 90, 91.
Wow.
And the last, actually, if you'd like, I would read the last page when you have time, if
okay.
After the news. It's,
we can.
It will not take long.
Yeah, we can. And you can do it right now, actually, because we're still waiting for the news from our wonderful Phil Graham.
Maybe there is no news. That would be good.
That would be good these days.
Yes. This is a little piece titled Afterwords. Nature, God or gods, the body, the puzzling, the dark, the inexplicable. The infinite types of ambiguity, the mysterious closed in upon itself, fragmented to the eye that sees. The things before names, the emptiness, the silence, the striving, with luck to come back with a story. This is the oldest meaning of the word enigma, a story or tale. Nature loves to hide. The booming blue grouse, Dendragopus obscurus, proclaiming his territory in fire-scarred red fir forest. The original ventriloquist, he can throw his voice here, there, above, below. He is a lover of trees and seldom seen. Though the pitch of his call is so low, some are unable to hear it. A body passing through this forest always feels the voice, knows it's there. Late April, in the upper montane forest of the Sierra Nevada, relic banks of snow melting into rich duff, millions of fir seeds scattering and scattered, each bursting with a tiny red root, desiring earth. Few will survive this exuberance. Orgy of moisture, followed by orgy of light. But still, the snowpack is below normal. Dust is inevitable. Some trees will fall to native beetles engraving their trace in xylem and phloem. Ravishing. Insects, too, have their orgy, as do woodpeckers. The signature of all things, the book of nature, not just a tired metaphor, but a fundamental way in which the world was once known, may still be known. Somewhere along the way, we confused a process with a literary trope, substituted manner for action, and set ourselves up in paddocks, the institutions. Here we made our stands, view the spectacle, and write our own books. We no longer read the weather, but the weather report. Nevertheless, the older world still haunts our words. It's the it when we say it's raining.
Beautiful. Beautiful. John, and I'm thinking this thought maybe not for the first time, but becoming a writer or writing anything is a journey, I think. And what has your journey been from, you said you came back here after being gone for 25 years. What brought you back here? And what sent you away and what brought you back?
What sent me away? I guess, what sends anybody away? You want to get away.
Yeah.
Youth. You want to see things. After growing up here on the East Coast, I wanted to spend some time in the West. I spent more time than I thought I was going to spend. All of it good. But then you reach a point where you just want to come back. Mm-hmm. And I did make one effort to come back earlier, and it wasn't the right time, and I wound up going back out for another 10 years. So, yeah, just a feeling mm-hmm. more than anything else.
Yeah. And I think we're about to experience the wonders of Hudson, and there's going to be a train coming through, which will interfere with our interview. So I'm going to do an interlude of music while the train barrels down on us. Okay, and so now we're going to come back to John O'Grady, Catskill author, who is going to read about where he lives in the Catskill Mountains.
Yes, this is a memory of childhood, but it gives a sense of what our neighborhood is like, the Catskill Mountains in general. The title of this little story is This the Road to the Edward James? The Edward James was a fancy restaurant out there in the middle of nowhere, famous for its steaks. The building, by all accounts, was in an old farmhouse that had been renovated, expanded, and made shishi. This happened after the fields around it had been let go. Years passed. Thick forest and everything that goes with it closed in, rendering it a rather obscure location for a fancy restaurant, but that didn't stop the people in expensive cars from coming. Frank Sinatra sang there once. He had come for the steak, but the proprietor talked him into performing right there on the spot. The guests were thrilled. Another time, Patty Page showed up. She didn't perform, but word has it, she enjoyed watching the bears. That was the other thing the Edward James was famous for. It had a refuse heap at the edge of the forest, and the bears would come in from the wild to enjoy it. With a drink in your hand, you could watch them from the porch, frolicking in the trash, and it was well known that if you waved to these bears, they would lift a paw in return salute. There were lots of stories like this about the Edward James. To get there, you had to travel an unpaved road lined on either side with immense wolf maples. It was a desolate route by urban standards, with no streetlights, no other houses, just the Edward James at road's end. Beyond that, only an inhospitable mountain. People with expensive cars usually avoid roads like this for fear of getting lost or breaking down or worse. You can never be too careful. All roads that lead to the middle of nowhere arrive at the same place, but there's no telling where one of these lonesome highways might begin. You could be on one right now and not even know it. The road we lived on must have looked a lot like the one the Edward James was on. In those days, it wasn't paved, and it had a strip of grass running down its middle. Along the way was an abandoned burial ground. You had to know where to look. But mostly the road coursed through lonely and shagged Catskill Forest as it headed up Paradise Hill. Since ours was the only house on this road, whenever people were lost, and this happened 3 or 4 times a week, they'd turn in our drive, pull up nearly to the door. They never got out of the car to come knock. They'd just sit there, expecting you to come to them. When you did go to see what they wanted, a car window would roll down and somebody inside would bark, "Is this the road to the Edward James?" "No," you tell him politely. "Well, where is it?" "Sorry," you say, "but you don't know." "Haven't you heard of the Edward James?" "Yes, you've heard of it. You've heard quite a bit about it." "You've heard about it, but you don't, you've never been there?" "That's right." "So you have no idea where it is?" "Must be around here somewhere," you admit, "since so many people come by asking about it. But never having been there yourself, you are loath to speculate. You wouldn't want to mislead anybody." "Well, what about this road? Where does it go?" "Dead end," you say. "So this isn't the road to the Edward James?" "No way," you insist, shaking your head. That usually ended it. The window would roll up, and the expensive car would head off. You could tell those people were really irritated when you had really irritated with you for not knowing where the Edward James was, or maybe they were irritated with the Edward James itself for not being easier to find. No telling. But when they got to the end of the drive, the people in the expensive cars always turned the wrong way, up the road, toward Paradise Hill, instead of back down the way they had come, despite what you had told them about the dead end. It's as if people like this need to see things for themselves. They never take anybody's word for it. 10 or 15 minutes later, usually, you'd see them pass by again, this time maybe on the right track, because they never turned in a second time. At some point, the Edward James burned down. For a while, it was big news on the mountaintop. Even bigger news was the realization that not a single person from around here had ever been to the Edward James. In fact, nobody knew where it was. But the biggest news of all among locals was the realization that for all these years, the whole mountaintop had been suffering the same problem. Strangers in expensive cars pulling up and demanding directions to the Edward James. Who were those people? And did they ever find what they were looking for? Well, wherever they came from, word must have traveled slowly, because for years after the Edward James burned down, people kept coming. At least once a week, an expensive car would pull up, its window would roll down, and a stranger inside would bark, "Is this the road to the Edward James?" Nobody had the courage to say that the Edward James had burned down. Decency requires that even rude strangers be given directions. So, we would just tell them, "No, this isn't it. But the road you want looks a lot like this one. You're not far away now."
Wonderful. Wonderful. And now we're going to hear something from Catskill, Certain Trees.
Yeah, I'll read a few. It's not a very long book.
It's a very gentle book.
It's slim. There's a lot of white space. That's as much part of the story as the words themselves. Similarly with the pictures, they're smaller than you might expect with as much space as they could have occupied. There's just a lot of white space, and that may in fact be the third track of the story, is all of the white space surrounding the words and the images. But I'll read a few.
And you're listening to John O'Grady,
yes,
local
are.
Author, on WGXC 90.7 Acre Hudson Catskill, the voice of Green and Columbia Counties.
And thank you for listening to me. I know you must have better things to do. But I'll read a few.
What could be better?
I'll read a few of the paragraphs here. They do proceed in a certain order, but it's not a direct linear one, so it doesn't really matter that these are out of order. So this is the opening bit. Once upon a time, in the wild heights of the Catskill Mountains, Rip Van Winkle ran into a rambunctious pack of revelers. They called themselves the Gentlemen of the Shade, and offered him a promising draught from a wicked flagon. He accepted eagerly, drank, and fell into deep sleep for 20 years. During that time, he dreamed about certain trees. In my youth, I liked to rummage around in the abandoned farmhouses still standing along the encroaching edge of the Catskill Mountain Forest. In one of those farmhouses, I found an old view camera, time-worn beyond repair. Particular philosophers speculate that the ground glass of a view camera retains every image ever focused on it. This is an intriguing prospect, but a problem arises. Very few of our technicians of the sacred have discovered how to release these occult likenesses from the clarity of their confinement. On that old view camera, the ground glass was missing. Presumably, it had long since been shattered.
Interesting. Nice little... excuse me. Nice little portraits in words.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the white space that's surround, you know, there's just the white space. I guess the equivalent on radio would be silence.
Yes.
Dead air. Yeah, I mean, I thought, yeah, maybe that's what I'll call this white space. Dead air.
Dead air.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we inspired you.
Oh, I have a friend who refers to because of all the, there's just something different about the Catskills when you, you know, the things seem a little more ramshackle than they ought to be, a little more decrepit. The word desuetude comes to mind. But I have a friend who refers to why this is so as, well, the Catskills are saturated with old air.
Ah.
And I think Washington Irving recognized that a couple hundred years ago.
Yes.
Even though he had never set foot in the Catskills at the time he wrote Rip Van Winkle, he could pick it up from the distance.
He was an interesting writer, you know.
Yes, and Rip Van Winkle is one of my favorite stories. So I
it was one of mine too when I was a kid.
Oh yeah, yeah. No. When I was a kid wandering around the woods, we found Rip Van Winkle's tombstone. Yeah. And it had an inscription. It was broken off at the bottom, but the top it said, "Just above upon this crest, for 20 years, Rip took a rest. Now he's gone where all men go." And that's where it was broken off. So we never found out where all men go. I tell this story and people say, "Oh, we had one of those in our neighborhood too." Different inscription, I presume. But.
Yeah.
So here's another bit from Certain Trees. Art improves nature. Or so they must have believed, those earnest Eagle Scouts who, some years back, reopened an historic vista on Indian Head Mountain. Their good deed was not well received by all in the neighborhood. As one local authority describes it, "That view has created controversy. They cut out a lot of trees. Some feel that it is worth it, while others believe that the trees should not have been cut. That cutout also helped warblers breed there. If you stay and rest at that vista for half hour, an hour and a half, you will see many warblers flying inside out. Warblers fly very fast, so watch carefully." Warblers are very fast. So are the shadows cast by the trees in the Catskill Mountains.
Wow. That's quite lovely.
And many of the photographs have trees with their shadows or just their shadows being cast. So there's something.
There's
certain times of the year, October and April, I think the angle of the sun just lends itself. The shadows are quite striking on sides of buildings and on the ground, lawns. So I've always been intrigued by them to take pictures of them. So.
Pretty amazing. And I think you're right that there is something, because when you cross the Rip Van Winkle Bridge, there is definitely a different, immediately there's a different feeling about everything.
Yeah, that's a good, I think you can, you know, if you just kind of tune into it, you do. You cross the Hudson from Greene County to Columbia County, there's a different feel, just as there is. You can feel almost at once when you cross the state line from Columbia County over into Massachusetts. It just feels different. And I lived for a little bit in western Pennsylvania near the city of Erie. And when I was driving back here to New York from time to time, as soon as you cross the border from Pennsylvania into New York, you could feel it. I don't know what it is, but there's some difference that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And there are local differences, nuances you can feel. And that's one of the things I try to capture in both the words and the pictures, these different nuances of a sense of place, if you want to call it that. Here's another little bit. On the untrammeled summits of the Catskill Mountains, it is still possible to enter that whispery realm that lies between shadows on the forest floor. Here is where the foliate lichen takes hold on the bole of a deep-rooted tree. Here is where dreams go when not being dreams and explanations come to an end. Here is an empty place. Old Rip stumbled into it. "God knows, I'm not myself. I'm somebody else. I was myself last night, but I fell asleep on the mountain, and everything's changed, and I'm changed. I can't even tell what's my name or who I am." How easy it is, then, to fall into tenebrous circumstance, the outlandish eye upon the lettered word.
Wow. That's good.
Well, I'm trying to play around with the difference between words, the language, and what it's trying to represent. Similarly with the pictures, none of these things are the things themselves. They're all kind of at least once removed from it. And sometimes in words you can get two, three, four times removed. And then our own minds themselves are already sort of in the way of whatever is out there you might call reality. So there's all these different filters, and that you may not be able to get through them all, but to become aware of them, that's one thing I try to play around with and
have
some fun with it.
Yes.
And finally, here's one last bit from Certain Trees. A poet reports that one time in the Catskill Mountains, she fell into a sort of dream trance in which she witnessed the surrounding trees step out from their usual places and parade around the lonesome stony ground of being. As it passed, one of those trees leaned down toward her to speak. In a soft, rustling voice, it said, "We do all this here and now just for you."
Okay. Just for you.
Just for
you. And
this
book, Certain Trees, was written just for you. Indeed. And it will be available soon on Amazon.
Yes, on Amazon and on my website.
And that's, again, johnpogrady.com.
Yep.
And also we hope in some of the local bookstores.
Yes, I hope to arrange to have that happen.
Yes, yes. So, John, thank you for coming and visiting with us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
What are you working on next?
I'm always working on
multiple things.
Several things at once, but I have a large manuscript of little pieces that I've been calling specimen episodes.
Specimen episodes?
Yes, I write these little stories or vignettes of trips to the supermarket, or when I go to the get the car serviced, or just out and about, things happen. I just write them down, ordinary things that have something extraordinary behind them. So you never know what it might turn out to be. Things happen in the supermarket all the time. I find myself writing about shopping because the people that you run into say things and do things, and stuff just happens in a supermarket. That's scarier than any haunted house sometimes, but then I come home and I write it down.
Yeah. I always find it interesting because in supermarkets, occasionally you listen into, you hear bits of conversations, and it's often enough to make you spin your head around and go, what?
Yeah, from the next aisle over. It's like, or people talking on the phone. No sense of privacy. Their living room is now brought with them out into the supermarket.
Yeah.
And I guess I have a love-hate relationship with supermarkets. I had this job when I was in college, counting cans in supermarkets. It was an inventory job. And they sent us all over the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, just counting the stuff in supermarkets. And it was often on a weekend. So we'd show up at a supermarket at 6 o'clock. In the evening on a Saturday. Everybody else is buying chips and beer for their party, and we're in there counting cans and their bags of chips. And it was a strange job. I did it for a number of years, and I still haven't recovered from it.
I was a carryout boy.
In the supermarket?
In the supermarket, yeah. That was my first job.
So you got to see everybody's car.
Pardon?
You got to see everybody's car when you bring the groceries out to their car?
Yeah. Yep, you did. And I had some wonderful adventures, and my very favorite one was I was unloading a lady's basket, and she had a little four-year-old daughter, and I said something to the daughter, and she looked at me and she said, "I don't let my daughter talk to the hired help."
Oh.
And I went, okay. So I helped her out to her car, and I did not talk to her child. And I came back in, and there was a lady who often waited for me, and because she liked me, and I took her stuff out to her car, and I put the groceries in her trunk, and she looked at me, and she said, "You will have your revenge, Matthew." And I said, "I don't understand, Mrs. whatever her name was at the time." And she said, "That lady treated you very badly. Her husband works for my husband.
Karma.
Karma.
At the car.
Yeah, karma at the car.
Yeah, you mentioned the car. Did you look into the cars? You know, you're loading stuff in there. Because cars are kind of like an extension of a person, you know.
Yeah.
Is it full of stuff? You know.
And I don't want the way my car looks right now to be a reflection of me, which is why I've got to go to the dump and get rid of a lot of the stuff that's in there. So.
Yeah, cars, bookcases, that's the first thing I look at when I go to somebody's house. Are there books? And secondly, if there are, I start looking at the titles on the shelves.
Yeah, well, you'd have a field day at my house. It's full of books.
And your CD collection here, that's the first thing I looked at.
It's really great. John, thank you so much for coming to visit us.
Thank you, Matt.
And I hope that the next time you have something out or you're planning to do something, a reading or something, do you ever do public readings?
Occasionally.
Okay. Well, when you're
up on the mountaintop.
Okay, well, when you are doing that, let us know so that we can both put it on our website so that people will know about it, and also we can have you in as a guest.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Pleasure talking with you this morning.
It was great. We have lots of little areas in common.
Oh, yes.
Yes.